Today is Sunday, June 26th, 2022. This is part 32 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Jim Haggart, last name spelled H-A-G-G-A-R-T. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Jim. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Tom. Hope you're doing well.
Very well. Thank you so much for asking. Jim, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, of course.
Thank you. Our last interview here, as he's kind of looking at the notes, trying to figure out where we were. Let's see now. We did, figure this out. Oh, yeah. We did part 31 on the 22nd of May, and we were wrapping up in 2014, I think it was. Can you, was that right? Or it was in the spring of 2015. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We'd gone into Nankoweap in April of 2015, yeah.
You went through that hike. Can you pick the thread up of your next journey in Grand Canyon?
You bet. Sure. Well, it was a little bit of extra time because the next trip didn't happen until early December. And you know, I like to get out there in October or November if possible. But you know, you take the time when you can. And I don't know what the constraints were, some meetings or health issues, whatever. But early December. Was what Art and I had planned to do an attempt on ISIS. And I shouldn't say we planned to do an attempt on ISIS. We planned to climb ISIS.
Okay.
And so, you know, we're going to do this from the South Rim. And I know some people these days have done ISIS in a day from the South Rim, which is kind of extraordinary. But
yeah.
I certainly understand that how, you know, if you know the route and you're moving fast, you can do that. But we, of course, you know, kind of structure these ascents around more extended trips that allow us to, you know, spend 4, 5, 6 days in the canyon and have a more enhanced experience, at least in our minds, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So that's what we plan to do. And the idea then was to go down the Kaibab and then hike from Phantom Ranch over into Phantom Creek and then go up and try ISIS that way. So I flew down to Phoenix on December 2nd, and Art picked me up at the airport there. Art, I don't know if I ever mentioned to you in these interviews, but Art was a pilot for America West Airlines.
Right, you had talked about that.
Yeah, and so he was always able to get me buddy passes, right, which really facilitated the trips. And he also had airport clearance and whatnot, so he, in the early days, before 9/11 anyways, he could get in, you know, right to the gate and meet me there, and he also got me first class a couple times, so that was kind of nice. Yeah, and anyways, so Art picked me up, and we did the usual business in town in Phoenix, and then drove up to Tucson to stay there and in the hotel, and then in the morning we would go to the backcountry office to get our permit. So we did that, and we got there early at the backcountry office, and we were first in line, and it only took us 10 minutes, so it was a great experience, right, with the permitting. Because you remember the previous trip here, we ran into the ranger on the Nankweep Trail, and you know, she and the follow-up letters made it pretty clear that we should be, you know, following the regulations here, which we concur with. So we got our permits and then headed over to the South Kaibab and started down. Of course, it's uneventful to get down there. And we went down to Phantom, and from there we hiked up to the Utah Flats route that we've talked about before, just above Phantom Lodge, mm-hmm. Phantom Creek, and a very nice trail through there now. There's a very conspicuous boulder camp there, right on the edge of the Tapete Sandstone exposure, and makes a nice flat, you know, camp on rock, which we prefer because it's clean, and we camped there for the night, and I thought it was one of the best sleeps ever, and that could have been because Art had taken to carrying along a little flask of Johnny Walker. And we each had a little shot of that before we crawled into the sack. And it really, you know, amazing how that enhances your sleep. And, you know, quite honestly, of all the times I've been hiking in the canyon, you know, it's very rare that we, with whoever I was with, very rare that, you know, we had any sort of stimulation, if you call it that, of any sort, you know. I remember I was with a fellow once who, I won't say who it was, but he asked me why I didn't smoke pot. He said it'd be such lightweight, right? And you could do it all the time. And I just said, you know, it's so and so. It's not the place for me. It's not the place to do that either, right? And so you know, that's always been my attitude. I kind of want to stay on top of things, right? And if you're camping on the edge of 500-foot redwall drops, and you're getting high, you know, at night, there's a potential problems there. So, anyways, I'm digressing here, but Art's little sniffer of Johnny Walker really hit the spot. Let's put it that way, and I think it may have changed my perspective a little bit in my older age. So, anyways, in the morning, the next morning, we had a leisurely start. In fact, much of this trip was leisurely. That was nice about it. Because everything was close at hand, and we had a lot of time to available to us. We were able to take our time with it. So we got up late and then headed over to Phantom Creek. And of course, the trail is really, really nice there. Although there are options now. I realized that when we wanted to descend to Phantom Creek, we followed what was the obvious trail down. And got down where, you know, pretty much, I think it's a standard route. But there's another trail that is a little bit farther upstream that you can take as well, and it doesn't really save you much time, right? It's two different options to go to the same place. But it's interesting that there are these various sub-trails that are developing in the area, depending on who is hiking, you know, at where. So, but anyways, we got down in the bed of the creek and then worked our way up towards upper end of Phantom to what they used to call the hippie camp. I don't know if it's still called that.
I think it is.
Yeah, but, you know, I've camped there in a number of times, 73 and 82, and I have never seen any evidence that hippies ever habited that place, you know. It's always been interesting to me that they call it the hippie camp. It's a great little spot, no question. But, you know, at least the hippies, I guess, were pretty unobtrusive. They didn't leave much evidence of their occupation.
Well, whatever was left had been totally removed by the Park Service, which is what the Park Service is supposed to do. Is, you know, people are moving in, they're going to move them out and clean things up.
That's probably. I'm sure that's what happened, right? Hey, has anybody ever written that up? That'd be an interesting little.
That's a good question.
Thing to write about. I mean, I never got any details about it. It was just called the hippie camp. And were there three hippies there? Were there 15? You know, it'd be really interesting to check out. But it's a beautiful spot, right?
Yeah.
And lots of cottonwoods, and so we camped there. And then the next morning we had planned to go up to the Shiva Isis Saddle,
right?
And put in a camp there so that we'd have a full day to do Isis. And so that morning then we got up, and before we headed up there, we walked up the bed of Phantom as far as we could in the redwall. And really nice in there, because there was a lot of flowing water that had formed a lot of icicles, and it was early December, so it was pretty chilly, and so all these icicles were hanging off these ledges of mauve limestone, and it just really looked really pristine and beautiful in there with this bright winter sun on it, you know, and of course all the extended shadows too, because it's winter. it just really, it really was a really pretty little spot to be in. And I've been in there, I did that in 82 when I'd been in there with my friends Chris and Sarah. But it was still fun to get back up in there. And I think Art and I definitely went as high as we could go. And checked out the alcove there at the end. It wasn't that spectacular, but it was still a beautiful little hike. And we came back down to the hippie camp then and put our full backpacks on, and then started up the route that takes you up the red wall there at the end of Phantom. And I'd done that in 73, kind of a little bit of an epic. And then I did it again in 82 with my friends, as I mentioned, Chris Beal and Sarah Baum, the three of us were in there. Although that time, I just went up for the day, or for the morning, actually, just to do the Red Wall route. And so when Art and I went up this time, I knew from my 82 experience that there was a much easier way than the way I'd done it in 73. So, you know, that was in the back of our mind, but it wasn't obvious where it went. And, but, you know, we figured it out quick enough, and Art led up, you know, without his pack on, the critical pitch in the red wall, and then realized it was not a problem, and then hauled up both our packs, and I came up, and then you walk a little bit to the west, and you find the very very straightforward but very exposed short climb up the final red wall cliff that brings you to a very large ledge, which then you can follow horizontally more or less around into the drainage, and that exposure is pretty spectacular because you have to make a committed step out over, you know, a couple of hundred feet of open air there. But the interesting thing about this in my mind was I had this recollection that this was a very easy bypass, and it, based on my 1982 experience. And again, in 73 when I went up, I went up a different route. I'm convinced of that, and I was wearing heavy duty mountaineering boots because that's pretty much what we used back then.
Right.
And I was solo. And it was a very gripping experience, and I was probably a much better climber then, too. So, but in 82, I found this, what to my mind was a very easy walk around, and it wasn't that easy this time, for sure, but it was straightforward. And I think that the easy walk around was the very straightforward second pitch that we did, which takes you up the, you know, as I mentioned, the very exposed step across to get onto this little rib of limestone, and then you just scramble up on big holes. And so it was just very interesting piecing all this together and trying to recollect, you know, from my memory of decades earlier exactly what I'd done. And that's not very, you know, you shouldn't rely on your memory from decades earlier.
Right.
Yeah, anyways.
What seemed easy in 1982, not quite so much in 2015.
Yeah, exactly. But anyways, we made it up, and it's a really neat route if you get the opportunity to try it. And from there, then we walked the top of the red wall over to the saddle between Isis and Shiva, and figured to put our camp there for the night. So we settled down, and in December the sun drops early, so you have long nights, and we wanted to make sure we get up really early for the walk out to Isis. So we got up early in the morning, and then you have to drop down. There's a significant notch there between Shiva and Isis in the red wall, but it's not challenging by any means. But you drop down, and then you reclimb on the south side. And then what we did was we headed south along the red wall rim to the very south end of Isis Temple. Now that today a lot of good climbers, strong climbers, will go in, and they can climb the buttress of red wall that is basically at the southeast end of Isis, and they climb that directly from Phantom Creek. So it avoids going all the way up Phantom the way we did and coming back south. And I'm not 100% clear on the history of this route, but But Harvey referred to discussions he'd had with Merrill Club, and you know, there was some suggestion that Merrill Club had tried this route and maybe pioneered it in trying to get up ISIS.
Oh, interesting.
And so this, this would have been like in the 40s,
or
50s.
Yeah.
So I, you know, it'd be neat to do some research on that and see what the basis of that is. But my understanding is, I think it was Ken Walters that went through, went in the 70s, early 80s, and actually did this climb then, and established it for the record, right? And I could be wrong on that, but that's my understanding. Again, it would be neat to find out, you know, the historical record on this.
Yeah.
And maybe people in Flagstaff, Scott Baxter or Lee Dexter,
Jim,
might know.
Jim Oldman may know.
Yeah. But I guess it's a fairly standard route now, because people are climbing ISIS once or twice a year using this buttress. And I'd kind of like to go down there and check it out myself. I remember looking at it from, you know, down below in Phantom, and getting the binoculars out and taking a look, and you know, you're always impressed with these things from a distance, and sometimes they turn out easier and sometimes they don't. But anyways, we were on top of the Red Wall. We didn't have to worry about that.
So
so we walked right past where that climb comes up.
So Jim, did you go to the south side of ISIS? And again, this, we're talking about the Supai formation. You're on top of the Red Wall. So you're walking along the contact between the Supai above and the Red Wall below. Did you go on the east side of ISIS on the top of the Red Wall, or on the west side?
Okay, we went down the east side.
Okay.
Okay, because it's a little more direct.
Yeah.
On the map, and you know, it was fairly easy going.
Yep.
It didn't take long. There's a couple of places where it pinches down a little bit, but and you have to, you know, scramble amongst the boulders, but in large part is kind of like what we call hands in pockets walking, you know, where you're just kind of shuffling along at a good clip with your hands in your pockets or in your belt or something like that. Anyways, fairly straightforward to get to the south end of ISIS, traversing along the Red Wall rim on the east side.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And I think it's probably about 50% longer to do the west side.
Okay.
You know, so if you were to do that, but. But what you do then, what we did anyways, was from that end of ISIS, you can get through the first three Supai bands very readily, and which we did. We went up then, just going straight up the ridge. You get through the first three bands, and then you follow along on a very continuous ledge below the fourth Supai band, which is the most prominent one. And we follow that all the way back to the north end, all the way, quite honestly, to the very, very north end.
Wow.
And we knew that there was the route went up through that Supai cliff near the north end. And but we didn't actually see it, although we saw a couple of possibilities. We didn't see anything obvious, let's put it that way. And then we got to the north end. There were no more options, right? So we looked up, and I could actually see a runner sticking out of a crack, and I thought, oh, this must be it, right? And, of course, ISIS is supposed to be like third class, right? So we weren't too expecting too much. And so I basically went up first and got up there, and this is like a very interesting overhang. It's split by a crack. And I realized, you know, to do this move, I was going to have to just let go of my feet and then kind of do a mantle up through this wide crack. And I just had this was like 25 or 30 feet off the deck, right? And I just had no interest in committing to that move. And so it was a little disappointing. We backed off, and Art didn't even want to try it, right? Because he'd seen me flailing up in there, and we backed off, and we kind of chatted about it, and we just decided, no, we're not gonna do it. You know, if this is the way, it's too much for us. And it's too bad, because Art had crafted this beautiful little summit register box out of copper, and you know that it had he put in a little a pencil and a sharpener and a little notebook. It's all wrapped in a Ziploc bag. Hmm. And he actually inscribed Isis Temple with the elevation on the box. You know, so the idea was to put a nice summit register up there. And interestingly, Tom, you might want to talk to Art about this, because he has produced these summit registers for virtually all the summits in the Grand Canyon now. And he's given them to people like Jake Daly and Sean Peters to take out. And, you know, these guys have been just whipping through the summits, and they are putting these registers out. And I think it's pretty neat, because they're all the standard format, right? This copper box and with the contents, and it's just a really neat thing that Art has done. He's he doesn't want to talk about it, but if you called him up and chatted with him, I'm sure he'd tell you the story about that. So, but anyways, we had this box, and it was the prototype box, and we really, you know, Art was really excited about putting it out on Isis, and we didn't make it. So we were pretty disgruntled, you know, and it was what it was. Unfortunately, we had brought enough rope to rappel, because we wanted to drop straight down from the summit as much as we could.
From the north side and down
to
the
avoid that long approach.
Yes,
so we did rappel and then walked back over to our camp and relaxed there for the rest of the day you know, kind of disappointed, but still enjoying the
well. So what's the deal? Third class? That's not third class. What you're talking about?
And no, it wasn't third class at all. So what happened was, okay, so after the trip, Art went. Came back, and I went home, and Art, you know, went to his place, and he went online a couple days later, and he looked up somebody's photo records of this, and we saw. What they did was a very obvious chimney that we had just walked right past.
Oh.
We had looked up at it and thought, well, maybe, you know, this is looks like it could go, but it kind of looked like it was a little harder than we expected, you know. And apparently it is fairly unprotected and a little ballsy, but it's very apparently it's very easy. And so that is the route, and we had just missed it.
And that's right there on the north side.
It's right. Yes, you're on the west side of the north and north ridge. Okay,
all right.
But it's right there. It's probably, I don't know. It's probably 100 meters max, 75 meters south of where we actually were trying to go up the very tip of the north ridge. Right.
Okay.
So, I meant to say, you know, there was that runner hanging in that crack. And that's one of the reasons I tried to do that. And the only thing I can assume is that somebody rappelled off that, right?
That makes sense.
And so it kind of misled us. But anyways, you know, we found out afterwards that we'd walked right past it as we have in the past on other things, and it's not that hard. But we consoled ourselves by saying, well, you know, next time we'll come in from Teal Point and camp at Shiva Saddle and just, you know, and just do it really quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and hopefully there'll be another time. I don't know. I'm getting kind of old, Tom.
Yeah, we are, aren't we?
Hmm. We'll have to see. You know, I've still got some plans, but we'll see. But anyway, so the next day we decided to go, rather than go back down to Phantom, we decided to go the Trinity Creek route.
Okay,
which is. A little bit more, you know, open walking, and so we dropped down through the red wall there, west of Isis, and then worked our way down into Trinity Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go down far enough there, there's a nice little campsite up on ledges above a junction that heads up towards Isis again,
right.
And this is an exit creek that you can take to get back up onto the Tonto. So you go down Trinity, and you get go through the Tapetes, and you get down into the schist, and that's where we decided to camp at this junction. And there was salty water there, but at least it was water, and so the next the plan was for the next day that we, you know, hike back to the east. But the rest of that day, we decided to go up Trinity Creek, and that was a pretty neat because way up in the shale, way up in Trinity Creek, we found this wonderful water hole, and it was just such fresh, clean, sweet water, right? That it was a real treat to get a full drink of that and fill the water bottles with that, because the stuff downstream was pretty salty in the schist and not really appealing. And but we hiked as far as we could up into Trinity and got up into the alcoves, you know, under the Redwall Drops, and it was pretty bare in there. Trinity is a very bare drainage. You know, I've been talking so much about the Nankweep and Quaggan drainages and the Redwall valleys up in there, in those drainages, and you know, this is totally different because it's definitely Sonoran desert almost vegetation, and no firs in there or extensive water, but nonetheless, it's pretty spectacular to go up into these alcoves. Now, although I think the best of these low elevation alcoves that amphitheaters are the ones around Powell Plateau. You know, you go the ones you would access from the river.
Right.
You go up these drainages, and you know, you get, I don't know, for some reason, I guess it's there's a fair amount of water coming off Powell. I'm not sure, as opposed to, you know, in this area where it's just coming off Shiva Temple. But some of those amphitheaters are really spectacular up under Powell Plateau. But anyways, getting back to the trip at hand here, we had a leisurely walk down at Trinity in the afternoon to our camp, and then slept there, and the next morning then just worked our way back to Utah Flats, and we were kind of interested in checking out as much of the trail. There's old trail construction in there in various places, and it was kind of interesting to find some of those constructions.
Cool.
And try and piece them together, and it's not clear to me exactly where the trail goes in its entirety, but that's another project that would be interesting to check out. But we did work our way eventually by following just the bench above the river that, you know, goes above Horn Creek Rapids and whatnot,
right,
around back into Utah Flats, and camped at the same place we camped the night going out. This time, however, it was kind of spitting and rainy, so we not heavy rain, but we had to prepare against that, and there was heavy wind too, so it was not the best night. So the next day was pretty uneventful. We had our descent into Phantom Ranch, and we went up to the ranch house there, and we talked to this fellow, very personable guy, who was running the canteen there, and we were just chatting, telling stories, and he said that one of the things that he likes to do on his days off is go back to New Jersey, and he would go to New Jersey on a 4-day trip from Phantom Ranch.
Wow.
So to see his family there. I thought this was great, hilarious story, right? That and I could just see it, a young canyon fellow in love with the canyon, but also wanted to visit home, and you know, you just get off at what, 4 o'clock, and then you run up the trail, and then you take your car down to Phoenix and hop on a flight, and then you turn it all around in 36 hours later. So anyways, more power to him. That was fun talking with him, and we had a nice chat there. So the next that afternoon then we just hiked out the trail, and I had a pretty good time. It was 4 hours and 27 minutes.
Wow,
I think.
Awesome.
So you know, it's not too bad for somebody my age. I feel
it's
like
awesome.
Yeah, it was a nice trip overall, and disappointing not getting up ISIS, but you know, at least we did have plenty of a good hiking experience, and we had that Johnny Walker too, so that helped a lot. Yeah,
very nice.
So yeah, so you know, I can go into the next series of jaunts here if you want.
Yeah, let's do it,
Tom. Yeah. So that was in early December of 2015, and then I didn't get back. I didn't get a chance to get back down to the canyon to hike until early June of 2016, the following year.
Middle of summer. Wow.
Yeah, it was start of summer, and so what the plan for this, you know, was recognizing that it was the start of summer. It was going to be warm, and so we thought we'd do day trips off the North Rim. That was the plan.
Okay.
And so there's a number of summits that you can do in proximity to the North Rim in kind of like day trips. And so we had planned to do Juneau and Jupiter in a short overnight, and then we were going to do Elaine Castle out to the west and Guinevere and King Arthur Castle. Those were the five that we planned to do, and we felt like we could do this because you didn't have to get below 6,000 feet. The lowest we would have to get would be right around that at when we went out to Juneau and Jupiter Temple, and we didn't think it would be too warm down at that level. So that was the plan, and so we were watching the weather for a couple of weeks beforehand, and it was nice. It was staying cool, but then the week before I was to fly down there, it started to warm up a bit, but. But anyways, we had our plan it set, and so I flew in on the very end of May there, and Art met me at Sky Harbor Airport, and we took off and went up to drove up to Cliff Dwellers that afternoon.
Okay.
Evening. And for this trip, you know, in the past we always relied on Art Subarus. He's had several of them over the years, in praises, and now he's into cross treks, but for this trip, because we knew we were going to be camping out on the North Rim and doing a lot of day hikes, we thought we'd have more equipment. We'd like to have more equipment and make it a little more luxurious. So Art rented a Ford Expedition.
Oh.
And it was a little dicey because it had 170,000 miles on it. And there were things like the windows didn't work reliably and things like that. But it worked. The car functioned fine. It did what it had to do, right? And we were really appreciative of that high clearance.
Yeah.
On some parts of the trip. But anyways, we drove up to Marble Canyon, filled a car there, then went to Jacob Lake and had dinner there. And then we went to this campsite that we like, which is on the east side Forest Service Road. Just before you get to the park boundary, there's a road that cuts off to the east.
Yeah.
And it goes over towards South Canyon and then follows the rim. It's kind of like a fire access road.
Right.
Follows the rim down towards the trailhead that leads you to Saddle Mountain.
Yes.
Yeah, so we just have a campsite there. At that time was really nice. You'd drive in there about 5 miles, and then you could drive off the main road and camp there. And unfortunately, since that time they've gone through and regraded the road and cut down a bunch of trees, I guess for fire protection adjacent to the road, and our little side road where we used to pull off and drive into the woods and camp, you know, that's all been eliminated now. We've been back there a couple of times since, and you just can't access that anymore. So it's a little disappointing, but I assume it's all for fire control. So it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyways, the next morning, so we camped there, and Art had brought, you know, just great. We had canned beers and pop and chips and stew and just really great car camping food, and quite a contrast, you know. We had lawn chairs to sit in and little net bug tents to sleep in if we needed to. He really had it had planned this with luxury in mind, and so we had a really enjoyable evening there. And then the next morning we went to the backcountry office and to get our permits, right? And we were the first ones there again, But you know what they did? They took all the corridor hikers first.
Oh, wow.
And issued them their permits. And they made us wait. So we lost like an hour and a half.
Wow.
Just waiting while they processed all these corridor hikers. I don't even know why corridor hikers need a permit from the backcountry office. Maybe it's because they were camping down there.
Well, they're trying to keep a handle on use. I mean, there were gazillions of people down there, and they're like, look, if you're going to do, if you're going to do a rim to rim, you're going to do down and back. You know, you need a permit if you're going to drop down below the red wall.
Yeah, I get it. But, you know, I don't consider the corridor to be backcountry.
Well, why they made you wait, that's the question.
Yeah, well, why did we wait?
Yeah, no, if you were first in line, they shouldn't have made you wait.
I don't think so, you know, but you don't argue with the man, right?
Right, that's right.
So,
but we do ask questions, though, and we expect rational answers.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, you know, and of course, here we are trying to do the right thing.
Right.
And I might add, and we're getting, you know, delayed. Even though we were first in line, we're forced to wait. So it was an interesting little experience there.
Yeah.
And to top it off, they had all these heat warning signs posted all over the backcountry office. You know, yeah. like that, because the heat had, I mentioned that the heat was coming up, right? And now it was like 10 degrees over normal, right? So they're posting all these warnings, and maybe we should have heated them. But anyways, we finally got our permit for some camping on the rim, and then one overnight down below the rim. And so we headed over. The idea was to do Juneau and Jupiter first, and we headed over towards Walhalla Plateau, and then camped or would park the car at the road that goes out to Cape Final.
Okay.
And then we walked the road with our backpacks on, out to the drop off that goes down north of Cape Final, and this is a really a neat route that I remember reading about when I was in undergraduate in Tucson. I was reading about it in Harvey's notes at that time, and it just was really fascinating to me that he had found this route, you know, off of Cape Final, because it's a technical route. It requires a rappel. But, pretty challenging area to get into. But anyways, we found the drainage that takes you off the rim. It heads to the north. It drops down really quickly, and there's very little obstruction, a few cliffs to work your way through down into the Coconino. And then when you get to the lower Coconino, there's about a 75-foot drop. And so we had brought about a 90-foot rope. Art had pulled that out of his kit, and we set up the rappel there, and then did went down. It was very straightforward because much of it's vertical, so you're just kind of like right with your toe tips on the wall, right? And very very easy to negotiate, particularly on the way up, right, with the Jumar. So.
Right.
Anyways, we did that, and then got down below the Coconino. There's a secondary climb that you have to do right at the bottom, where there's a nice fixed rope and a very well placed tree, a small tree that you can use for a handhold to get you down the final drop. Anyways, there's a nice trail that goes from there along the base of the Coconino, and it was all very cool, right? Because it's all in shade that never gets sun,
nice.
Right? In that particular place of the canyon, so it was very relaxing to be in there. And when we came around the corner below Cape Final here, and we're facing the sun, it was quite a bit warmer, right? So we dropped down to the Supai ledges there, and it's you have to poke around to find the right way. It's not totally obvious, but it's straightforward. And got to the notch where the notch in the red wall. Between Juneau and Cape Final, and so this was going to be our camp for the night. And I noticed there that the throw in the red wall is like half of the red wall is up on the west side of the. There's a fault trace,
yeah,
right, that comes through here, and it's a huge displacement of the red wall at that point. So that was pretty neat to see, but it was pretty hot. And so we just decided we would relax in the sun for an hour or so. I'm sorry, in the shade for an hour or so.
Right.
And then try and do Juno when the, you know, in the afternoon, late afternoon, when it started to cool down a bit, or there'd be shade. We were actually going to try and do both of them, Jupiter and Juno.
Okay.
So we headed south about 3:45, and it was 95 degrees. Art checked his thermometer when we left this camp.
Wow.
And we're heading south to Jupiter, and we're heading up through the Supai. It's just a bunch of broken ledges with boulders and whatnot that you got to pick your way through. And I just started losing it, you know, with the heat. Mm. And like it was well over 100 by that time, and it was late in the day, and it was also altitude for me because
okay.
it's almost 7,000 feet there, and I'm just not used to that most of the time anymore. At least at that time I wasn't. So we had to bag it, and you know, realistically, in retrospect, especially now what I know now about the route up Jupiter. It's a much more complex route than we had expected, and it takes time, you know, to work your way up through there. So we didn't even have enough time, probably, if we'd been able to deal with the heat, or if I'd been able to deal with the heat. I don't think Art was having any issues with it, but anyways, for what it's worth, we turned around and went back to our camp without even considering Juno. We just wrote the two of them off. And so, you know, we're sitting there and in the camp at the Juno Cape Final Saddle. And nice little camp, comfortable. We had our dinner. And it's kind of depressing, though, and dejected that I hadn't been able to make these two summits. But it did cool down in the evening. And I remember going to sleep and listening to some owl, you know, off in the distance, quietly nice. Hooting mm. in that canyon stillness, and everything was peaceful. Everything was good again, and, you know, the plan was, well, we'll just go on to the next objective, you know, which was going to be Elaine Castle out to the west. So the next morning, we got up, and we got up really early, like at 4:30, because we wanted to beat the sun up. And because the initial climb we had to do was facing due east, and we Ooh. Managed to get up a couple of the Supai ledges before the sun actually cracked the skyline to the east. So we managed to do the worst of the hike out there in the shade. And
nice.
then when we got to the base of the Coconino, we were in pretty good shade there, and we just reversed the rappel and Jumart up that and got back up to the rim and I remember I had never actually been to Cape Final, so it was kind of I figured, well, let's take the opportunity, I'll just walk down there, it's just a few hundred yards or half a kilometer or so, but mm-hmm. down there and so Art hung out on the rim where we came up, and I walked down to the Cape and I actually was able to catch my wife on the cell phone there, so
oh,
that was
wow.
kind of neat. Yeah, and there were a number of other hikers that were out there. It was kind of a neat place to be. But we went back to the car and then had a lunch there and some, well, late breakfast, really, and then went into the village and cleaned up and got some drinks before we headed out to Elaine Castle. Now, we had to drive back north out of the park and then down towards Big Spring and, you know, following the good roads there. They're all pretty well graded. And then headed south from down towards Big Spring Canyon. And there's on the old maps, there was a Forest Service road that one time existed that, I'm sorry, it was a fire, you know, a jeep, a fire track
right.
that would go out, that headed out towards Lancelot Point. And we were hoping to find that, but we didn't see any trace of it. So we basically just parked the car where we thought was the best access.
Hey, Jim.
Off the road.
Hey, Jim, yeah. Hang on a second.
Yeah, sure.
How come you guys, you're there at the North Rim.
Yeah.
Why didn't you take the road out toward Point Sublime?
Oh, yeah, because Well, because we wanted to do Elaine first because it was a one-off, right?
Okay.
Whereas Guinevere and King Arthur were two.
Right.
And we knew it was going to be a longer trip to go out to those two. And we also didn't know about Crystal Ridge. And that's the main reason we had brought this vehicle.
Oh, okay.
Because we'd had some challenges on Crystal Ridge in the past when one comes up from the west side. And so we thought the plan was that if we went this way, the way I just outlined to you,
mm-hmm.
and we wanted to come back, and you know, after we successfully climbed Elaine and King Arthur and Guinevere, if we wanted to come back to the village directly, we would try Crystal Ridge
mm-hmm.
from the west.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if we make it, fine, it's great, because the
Got
trip's
it.
Over. But if we went out there and we weren't able to make Crystal Ridge at the beginning of the trip, then it would
you'd have to come
delay.
Back, and you'd have to drive all the way around. Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was the plan. And anyways, in the late afternoon, we parked the car off the road there and started up. And, I mean, it was a lot of fun, Tom, because it's all ponderosa pine with some deadfall,
mm-hmm.
you know, here and there. And you have to very carefully follow the height of land, you know, and a compass. But I was just basically following the height of land. And by piecing together the high points on the ridge, which are very, very subtle, but, you know, you can see them, we picked the route out perfectly.
Nice.
Perfectly, you know, to Lancelot Point. It was just like right on the money. And it took us like 2 hours to go through the woods and get there. But I was really pleased with the route finding, you know, that we did to get out there. And so we got to the rim, and it was late, you know, late in the afternoon, and we were in no rush. So we dropped our gear because we were going to camp there for the night,
mm-hmm.
and scouted the route out down through the Kaibab and
okay.
figured out where that went. It's pretty straightforward off Lancelot Point.
Yeah.
There's a fair amount of use people going down in there for caving and whatnot, and also for, I guess, access to that to the hiking route that goes around Modred and Merlin Abyss.
Right.
But so in the morning we put on our day packs and headed down, and of course, you know, it's getting hot, and I hate to say it, but you know, we got down to the saddle. It's east of Elaine, and then worked our way around the south side and started to head up towards to the Coconino ledges. And this is all facing to the southeast, so you're right in the sun.
Hmm.
And I just bagged out again. And so we just sat there under some pinions for a little while and decided to retreat. And from Lancelot Point, we could see, before we started down, we could see that the hike out to King Arthur and Guinevere, which are, again, also third-class summits,
mm-hmm.
Which that hike leads from just south of Galahad Point. We could see that that was a much bigger endeavor than we had expected. And so we decided, basically sitting under this pinion at Elaine Castle, that we're going to have to bag not only Elaine but the other two as well. And when I say bag it, I mean give it up, not...
Right.
Not get one in the bag. So, again, you know, pretty unfortunate, but the heat was just taking it out of me. And I do want to say, for the viewers or listeners who might just be totally dejected with Jim Haggard's success as a canyon summiter, that I have been back there and done all these climbs since, okay?
Well, you're going to talk about that in the future, and that's all right.
Okay, I just want to make that clear, you know. Juno, Jupiter, they've all been done, right? So, but this was, it didn't work out this time, right? So,
yeah.
So we headed back up to the rim, and then, you know, had a nice relaxing walk back through the forest and back to our car. And at least we had, you know, we had luxury in the vehicle, right? We had cold drinks and clean clothes and water, and so we drove the vehicle down to the old ranger station near Cannabinet Spring.
Yep, yep.
And Art had heard that they had saved that that structure from the fire. I guess the Galahad Point fire. I'm not sure which fire it was. By wrapping it in aluminum foil.
Mm.
And we actually, when we got there, we could actually see pieces of aluminum foil that were still adhering to the building.
Huh.
And I'm not sure it's aluminum foil. You know, it's not like your Alcoa wrap or
right.
Reynolds wrap. But you know, they had actually put this material around it, and there were thousands of staples, right, that where they had stapled this stuff to the side of the cabin. So they had protected the cabin, and which was kind of neat to see. And so we had lunch there at the there's a picnic table nearby, and relaxed and plotted out our next little trip here. So, you know, at this point we would have been, the original plan would have called for us to head to the southeast now, to out towards Galahad Point, and then drop down to do King Arthur and Guinevere. But
right.
But that was obviously off the agenda. So I suggested that, you know, here's something, Art, I know we can do. Little Dragon, right? Mm. Which is, you know, Big Dragon is a very long hike. It's a long ridge that heads south. It's a north-south trending ridge between Crystal and Dragon Creeks. And, you know, if you go out to the Dragon Head, it's a long hike to get out there, about, you know, about 5 miles from the road.
Right.
But, you know, you never drop down below the Supai, so you stay fairly high. And I had done that years ago, and so I'd been out to both the Dragon and the Dragon Head. But we thought, well, we could try the Little Dragon, because it's a tiny little ridge just off the rim, and, it doesn't drop down very far. It's got to be easy and straightforward. And so we said, okay, we'll try that. And to top it off, it's also on the east side of Crystal Ridge. So if the vehicle was going to have any issues, we would deal with those issues before getting to this hike. So so that's what we planned to do. We drove. We left the Forest Service cabin and drove south along the road there until we found a nice campsite, and then camped off the side of the road in the vehicle, or, you know, car camping with tents and whatnot, and using the vehicle as a base. And then in the morning, headed east along the road, which would be the Sublime Point Road, I guess that's what it's
right.
technically called. And then we managed to deal with Crystal Ridge without any problem with this big beast of a car. So it was very straightforward. And then we're following through the forest, and I'm trying to figure out where to stop the car. You know, interestingly, another side story that I just thought of here. Whenever we've gone on our trips, Art does virtually all of the driving. You know, the guy loves to drive. He's a very good driver, and he just drives his Subaru everywhere. And rarely do I get a chance to drive his vehicle. I mean, I have once or twice. You
mm-hmm.
know, but this time, for some reason, because it was this big clunky Ford Expedition, he gave me the wheel when we got out of Phoenix, like at that rest stop up there north of Verde Valley.
Yeah.
And I did all the driving on the entire trip until we got back into Phoenix. So it was really an interesting change, right, for me to be the driver on all this. But anyways, just as that was an interesting aside. And so we're driving east along the Sublime Point Road here, and we know that we've got to find the ridge that heads south to the Little Dragon axis. So we figure we finally got it, you know, and there's very interesting topography in there because there's a number of sinkholes. And if you look at the topographic map, some of them actually are shown to have water in them.
Oh, wow.
But anyways, we parked the car and got our day packs ready and then headed south. And we thought this would be a piece of cake, right, to get to the rim, and then we'd, you know, just work our way down and work out to the Little Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we get to the rim, and we look off the edge, and something's not right because, you know, we couldn't really see the topography we were expecting. We couldn't see the Little Dragon ahead of us, and the Big Dragon seemed to be a lot closer to us on the west than we anticipated.
Huh.
And we walked along the rim a little bit, and then we realized, yes, we'd come in about a mile to the west of where we had hoped to be. And so, okay, well, not so big a deal, I guess. You're just going to have to walk to where you should be. But it was kind of awkward because we had to go keep... There were like three drainages that we had to drop down and then climb up and then drop down the next one and climb up. And to top it off, there was all this dense vegetation, willows and locust.
Yes, the thorny locust.
New Mexico locust,
yeah.
It is. A lot of that we had to deal with. And because I think it had burned up there within the past 20 years or so. And anyways, we finally made our way to the ridge that does lead south to the Dragon, and we got there, and we could see then the route ahead, and it was very unassuming, you know. In fact, we got to the summit of the Little Dragon, the southern summit, and it's kind of a homely place, you know. Mm-hmm. There's really no shade there, and it just was not very attractive whatsoever. So we read the register. A few people had been out there before, and then quickly headed back towards the car. But so interestingly, when we got back to the rim, we knew exactly where we were, right? And so I figured if we just follow the drainage that's just to the west of this ridge that leads out to Little Dragon, if we just follow the drainage property, we're going to come back to the car right where, you know, it should be. And so we did. We followed the drainages up, and everything was exactly as shown on the map, and we got to the road, and then somebody came along in their car coming from the west, and we asked them, did you see a big Ford Expedition? And they said, yeah, it's a mile back.
Oh, wow.
So we had missed, you know, we had basically stopped short a mile of where we ought to have.
Yeah, yeah.
And we thought it was pretty funny. You know, we started laughing when we realized what had happened, you know.
Well, it's an easy walk on the road for a mile, too, so that's...
It was only three-quarters of a mile when we finally, you know, when we clocked it out. But it just goes to show you that, you know, I'd had such success navigating the forest going out to Lancelot Point, you know. And then a couple days later... get totally snookered going out to the Little Dragon, you know, for whatever reason, I don't know, but it was fun. It was a fun thing to chat about, right, and laugh about.
Yeah.
So that was it. And I have to say, you know, when I'd been on this sitting on the south side of Elaine Castle, and I was plodding back up to the rim after we turned around there, I was basically saying, I think this is it, you know. I think I'm done with this canyon business. I just can't really handle this anymore. And it was kind of a obviously it wasn't a turning point because I haven't stopped, but it was a very, you know, just kind of a emotionally a kind of a roller coaster experience. And and I know other people have gone through this. I've talked about it with people, and you know, sometimes you have experiences that don't go the way you plan. In fact, they go so far awry, and you know, you don't achieve anything that you wanted, that, you know, you almost feel like maybe it's time to quit. And those thoughts went through my head. And but I have to say that after we did Little Dragon and finished the trip, and, you know, came back to Phoenix, and we stopped in Cliff Dwellers and had our favorite hamburger there with our favorite Navajo waitress. I mean, everything kind of relaxed, and I saw the trip for a much more positive experience than I did when I was actually undertaking it, right? So there have been subsequent trips afterwards, and this is maybe not the most successful trips, but we had a great time. And you know, it's very rare that we do this car camping business, to And, right. and to have that kind of luxury available to you is really satisfying. You
well,
know? Particularly when it's hot.
It's yes,
you know?
Exactly. It's the heat,
yeah.
but it also is that locus. That area out there is very brushy, and it's not a hands in pockets kind of walk.
No.
Like you know the Esplanade is, or top of the Redwall here and there. It's a serious brush thwack.
Yeah,
which really makes things different.
Yeah. I remember when I was young, I was asking Harvey about Powell Plateau, and I said because I really wanted to hike around Powell Plateau. And if you think back to our discussions of earlier hikes a year or so ago when we were talking about this, Art and I spent a long time before we finally accomplished a circum-Powell navigation, and a number of different attempts that
right.
we took before we finally got one. And I was but initially I was asking Harvey in the 70s. I said, "Well, Harvey, you know, what do you think about hiking around Powell Plateau?" And he said, "Well, you know, Jim, you know, here's this experienced canyon hiker talking to this naive little kid down in Tucson, an undergraduate, and he said, "Well, it'd probably be a wonderful area to go to, but I'll bet the brush along the east side of Powell would be pretty tough to navigate." And I don't know, because I've never been on that stretch. And when we did Powell, I'd say we circumnavigated it, but we went along we went up Powell at Dutton Point. We went back up onto the plateau.
Right.
And
everybody else to walk through that wonderful garden of the top of the Powell Plateau and avoid all that brush down on the slopes and sides. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm planning to do Masonic Temple here, probably as a day hike.
Oh, okay.
And I may just try that from Wav Saddle drop down and do the east side of Powell at the Esplanade level to get out to Masonic Temple. And then I will have completed the entire, if I come up at Dutton Point, I will have completed this entire circumnavigation. But and then we can test Harvey's theory about the density of vegetation out there. But
you
know, your point is so well taken.
You have been warned.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe we had to cut this off. But you know, it changes from year to year. Like when I did my big through hike in the early 70s, and I hiked the stretch of Esplanade from Big Saddle down to Swamp Point. I've had a heck of a time with Manzanita on that,
right.
And it took me 2 days. And then when Art and I went back there in the early 2000s, it was a cakewalk. You know, it was quite literally a cakewalk. We did swamp Wav Saddle to Big Saddle in like 6 hours, and we just did not run into the same vegetation.
I wonder if it had burned.
I didn't see evidence for that.
Oh, okay.
I think we were just more adept at route finding through the Manzanita, you know, finding the open patches. I don't know. But anyways, it does. Every trip's a different experience.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Anyways, I'm happy to have done them all, even with the disappointments.
Well, this is good. This sounds like we have gone through this June 2016 hike, and anything else you want to add to this part?
No, I think that's it. I've kind of covered it in everything I can remember anyway, so
all right.
Sure, let's pull the plug on it.
Okay, well, that sounds great. With that, then, this will conclude part 32 of Grand Canyon Oral History Interview with Jim Haggart. Today is Sunday, June 26, 2022. My name is Tom Martin, and Jim, thank you so very much.
Well, thank you, Tom. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Gosh, my pleasure. All right, hang on.